What has the Supreme Court recently given to the pro-life effort? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We're joined by our Associate Director, Janet Marana. And today, Janet, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court's latest decision on abortion. It came out in April of 2007 and dealt, of course, with the ban on partial birth abortion. And we have a special guest with us joining us by phone today to discuss that decision as well.
That's right. We have with us Dan McConkie, and he is the Vice President and Executive Director of Americans United for Life. And welcome to our program, Dan.
Thank you for having me on, Janet.
Dan, it's great to be with you. We really highly regard the work of Americans United for Life, and it's really the legal arm of the pro-life movement. And maybe we can start by having you give our viewers a kind of a snapshot of what AUL is and what you do.
Sure, Father. Well, Americans United for Life was founded in 1971, and we originally started out as an educational organization. But shortly thereafter, within 2 years, the Supreme Court handed down Roe versus Wade, and we very quickly saw the need to reach out there and really get involved in the legal strategy, legislation, litigation. And so for the past 30-plus years now, we have been working through the courts trying to overturn Roe versus Wade and through the state legislatures to help them pass the best pro-life laws they can and then to defend those laws in court when they get challenged by Planned Parenthood and the ACLU.
It really, AUL provides a wealth of information for pro-life people to keep up on what is going on in state legislative activity, and also when somebody in a state or in a particular organization wants to craft legislation, really the model legislation that AUL provides is very, very helpful. And that, of course, leads into our discussion today. Janet and Dan will explain this more. Since Roe versus Wade in 1973, the Supreme Court has ruled repeatedly on abortion. There have been many decisions, most of which people do not recognize. They're certainly not as well known as Roe v. Wade. But so many decisions on the topic of abortion, much of the time dealing with what an individual state may or may not do to regulate abortion. Roe v. Wade said they cannot ban it, but what can they do besides that? And of course, the court has said, given various answers to that question. Most recently, the Supreme Court heard the case Gonzalez versus Carhart on the question of partial birth abortion. Congress banned this procedure. President signed the ban into law in 2003. And immediately, the pro-abortion forces challenged it in court, went to the Supreme Court, and in April of 2007, we got the decision back from the Supreme Court. Dan, why don't you give us, in a nutshell, what happened? What did the Supreme Court say?
Well, the Supreme Court upheld on a 5-4 decision in a decision written by Justice Kennedy, the federal law as it was written. And what we saw in this decision was not only did the court say this federal ban on this particular abortion procedure is constitutional, but they also gave us a real hint as to what other types of abortion bans and regulations that they're going to allow, what this majority probably won't allow, given that the Justice Kennedy is now the centerpiece, the pivotal vote now on the court. He supports Roe versus Wade, but at the same time, he does believe that there should be much greater limitations allowed by the Constitution. And so this decision really was able to shine a light and indicate to us how far we can go, especially state legislatures, how far they can go, and what things are probably out of bounds.
I often point out that, and this decision is another example of it, how the more the courts deal with the abortion issue, the more information we end up having, educational information, to instruct the American people what an abortion procedure actually is, because you have testimony gets entered into the record. You have the courts actually describing the procedure in great detail. In fact, as you know, at the beginning of this recent decision, the court says the act, that is the ban on partial birth abortion, proscribes a particular manner of ending fetal life. So it is necessary here, as it was in Stenberg, which was the 2000 decision of the court on partial birth abortion, to discuss abortion procedures in some detail. And boy, the detail sure is disturbing and graphic, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, it was interesting to see this case actually go through the legislative process or the litigation process, because they had to go to federal district court and appellate court. And one of the judges in the appellate court in New York was blind and actually forced those individuals who are on the pro-abortion side, who would normally just show pictures of the abortion procedures, to actually describe them in graphic detail, because this judge could not see what those pictures were. And so entered into the record through this process was some graphic detail that we don't normally see, isn't normally recorded for all of us to be able to go out there and read. And even in this decision, we saw Justice Kennedy write in graphic detail what happens in this procedure and indicating that it is in the state's interest, it's in each individual state's interest, to ensure that when a woman decides to go through this procedure, that she fully knows what's going on, so that later, you know, this is something that you can't go back. You can't change later. And he said this is an important decision that women need to be able to know about up front, so that they don't come back later and regret their decision because they weren't fully informed.
Let me read that passage that really embodies what you were just saying. The majority opinion writes, "The state has an interest in ensuring so grave a choice is well informed. It is evident that a mother who comes to regret her choice to abort must struggle with grief more anguished and sorrow more profound when she learns only after the event what she once did not know, that she allowed a doctor to pierce the skull and vacuum the fast-developing brain of her unborn child, a child assuming the human form." Wow. When the majority of a Supreme Court decision is talking in this language, that's progress, especially when you followed the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on abortion over these decades. And Janet, of course, the regret of the women ties in very deeply.
We know that from the women from the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, who we've been standing out in front of the Supreme Court since 2003 with the "I Regret My Abortion" signs and giving their testimony. So it's very encouraging to see that obviously the justices were listening to these testimonies. You know, but Dan, I was just wondering, from this decision, what did the pro-life movement actually get? Like, how would you analyze that? Because, you know, some people are criticizing it now, saying, well, you know, it's really not ending any abortion, really. You know, but what would your analysis be? What did we get from this decision?
Well, there's a number of things that we got. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that back in 1992, in the Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision, there was a real loosening of sense, essentially, where the Supreme Court said, look, we're not going to overturn Roe versus Wade. It's one of the questions that's before us, but we're not going to overturn Roe, but we are going to allow states to regulate abortion, not ban it, but regulate it much more strenuously than they've been able to before. And then the court kind of waffled on that to some extent. You saw Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, after helping to craft this opinion, kind of go the other way. And in 2000, ultimately, she voted to say that partial birth abortions was a constitutional right. And fortunately, she's since been replaced by Justice Alito. But this decision really does restore those opportunities that was given to us in 1992 in Casey. It reinforces the importance of informed consent. And the passage that you just read, Father, talks about this. And we see that there is a real desire in Justice Kennedy to say, look, if we're going to allow abortion, we need to make sure that the consent that is given by women is fully informed, that they as much as possible know what it is that they're getting into before they go and make this very, very dramatic decision. We also saw a narrowing of the unlimited health exception that has dominated these kind of politics and this litigation since Roe versus Wade. What a majority of Americans don't realize is that on the same day that Roe versus Wade was handed down, we saw a decision also called Doe versus Bolton. And in that case, the Supreme Court said, you know, with these two cases together, abortion is going to be allowed, and the only time it can be regulated is if you have a health exception. And the health exception in this case, they crafted to include not just physical health, but also mental health, social health, or emotional health, familial health. In other words, if you're a woman and you're pregnant and you feel guilty about the fact that you're pregnant, maybe something happened that you shouldn't have been doing, you know, that is a health exception. If you have two children, and, you know, three would just provide too much of a burden upon you, that is also an issue of health. So the court, for the first time through this decision, narrowed that very extreme version of health. We also saw that the court indicated that they're not likely to begin creating any new rights, at least not any time in the near future. Mm. By the kind of restraint that the court had in this decision, it's very unlikely that they're going to be creating new rights to human cloning or any of these other things that dominate the new biotechnologies that are coming to us now.
In short, would you go so far as to say that with this decision, it seems as though the Supreme Court is turning a corner?
I definitely believe that's the case. And my hope is that we can maintain this curve. I mean, fortunately, we now have five members on the court, most of which are relatively young by court standards. So we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to maintain this majority and continue to move down the path. When we were watching this case and as it was going through the process, our president, Clark Forsythe, was saying, you know, it's through this case we're going to be able to see, is the Supreme Court going to change abortion law at 80 miles an hour or 2 miles an hour? And this really does come at somewhere in between. We're not going to see an overturning of Roe versus Wade tomorrow, but, you know, they're going to begin loosening up. And I think as we begin being able to put other cases into the pipeline, questioning the health exception, questioning the ability of abortionists to be able to walk in and be able to represent all women, when they go in to challenge abortion laws in court, when we kind of do what we can to undermine these things, I think that we're going to have a favorable reception on the court.
Well, Dan, we're going to talk more about this after our break and explore some of the other ways that the court affirmed various legitimate state interests when it comes to protecting life and regulating the medical profession. So stay with us, and brothers and sisters, we'll be right back with more of Gospel of Life after these messages.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Well, welcome back. We're talking with the Vice President and Executive Director of Americans United for Life, the legal arm of the pro-life movement doing fantastic work across the country, and Janet Morana, our associate director, with us as well. And we're exploring the Supreme Court's April 2007 decision upholding the federal ban on partial birth abortion. The decision, as we're saying here, did not only uphold that ban, which is significant in itself because it's the first time since Roe v. Wade that we have successfully banned an abortion procedure, but secondly, because of the ways in which the court reaffirmed certain interests that the state can pursue as it legislates on abortion. Now, Dan, I want to read a couple of other quotes and invite you to comment on them. The court said here that the act, that is the partial birth abortion ban, quote, expresses respect for the dignity of human life. And the court goes on to say it proscribes a method of abortion in which a fetus is killed just inches before completion of the birth process, and then it quotes Congress saying that choosing not to prohibit this will further coarsen society, to the humanity of not only newborns, but all vulnerable and innocent human life, making it increasingly difficult to protect such life. So it sounds here like what the court is looking beyond the procedure itself and saying, hey, wait a minute, you allow this procedure and a lot of other negative consequences on society and on the protection of life will follow.
Absolutely, Father. I completely agree with you. In part, I think it has to do with the way this procedure is done. I mean, this is the first time that we've ever had an abortion procedure in which part of the child is born as a part of the procedure being done. And there is definitely a divide in people's minds. A lot of people who want to support abortion want to believe that the unborn child is just a mass of tissue. It really has no moral consequence. But in order to do this kind of abortion, you have to partially deliver the child to do it. And it is definitely the case that it is impossible, I think, for your average human being to look at a child being half born and at that point terminate that child's life. It is something that is, I think, just so innate to who we are as human beings, that this is something, it was a relatively rare procedure, and in part it's because I think there are so few people who, while they may support abortion, are willing to go that far in order to defend it.
You know, what's interesting to me, too, in this decision, it refers back to a decision of almost exactly 10 years ago in June of 97, the Glucksberg decision on assisted suicide, where the court said there is not a constitutional right to assisted suicide. And now the court said here, the government, there can be no doubt, they said, the government has an interest in protecting the integrity and ethics of the medical profession. As in the Glucksberg decision, it said, sometimes we have to prohibit an act which simply comes too close to other kinds of activity that are clearly destructive of society. So in that case, it said, well, we can't say there's a right to assisted suicide because that's going to lead to involuntary euthanasia. And here they're saying, well, this is too close to infanticide, and the state has an interest in regulating the medical profession, and they don't give abortionists a free pass to be kind of outside the boundaries of the regulations that are given to other doctors, do they?
No, they don't. And, you know, this has been a long-standing argument by those pro-abortion advocates who want to, you know, they want this procedure to be available, yet at the same time, because of the, I think, in part, the overwhelming negativity that is associated with abortion, they have often really pushed that this not be a regulated procedure. You know, we have worked in state after state to try to help those states pass abortion clinic regulations because we know that if you're going to have an abortion, then you need, those clinics should be able to care for the woman if something goes wrong. You know, the doors should be wide enough for gurneys to fit through and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we have seen is an increase in the cost that's associated with it. We've seen abortion clinics close because, you know, they're not able to meet basic medical standards. And this is actually very interesting because one of the things that we do in the states is we take Planned Parenthood's own regulations, their own voluntary internal regulations, and we say, look, if this is good enough for Planned Parenthood, then the state should make it law. And then you have Planned Parenthood coming back and say, well, no, we don't want to make this mandatory.
Mm.
We just want to make it something that is voluntarily followed. Well, I'm sorry, but if the abortion providers are really concerned about women's health and not about making money, then they should not have any problem on doing whatever it would take then to care for women's health. And this just goes to show that is really not their top priority.
Well, Dan, we want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Janet, for having me on.
And we'll have everyone to be in touch with you through your website, aul.org.
Thank you very much, Father, and Janet, for having us on today.
It's been great having you, and we'll look forward to our continued contact. And brothers and sisters, we invite you to be in touch directly with Americans United for Life, AUL.org. And particularly, Dan, before we go, the resource Defending Life, can you tell us about that just in a nutshell?
Absolutely. This is a book that we put out on an annual basis that provides a lot of the basic information you need to know to understand abortion, bioethics, end-of-life issues. Find out what's going on in your state. Find out the laws that you can pass and work to do. We have our model legislation in there. It's a whole host of great summary material, all available in one place, and you can find that on our website or on Amazon.com.
Thanks again for being with us, Dan.
Thank you.
And brothers and sisters, stay tuned for more here on Gospel of Life. You'll hear how you can support our ministry, and then we'll be back with an action segment. Stay tuned.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. In the last 12 years, half of the nation's freestanding abortion clinics have closed, and the abortion industry is on the run. Gospel of Life Ministries has played a vital role in the rescue of countless children and is currently in place to save thousands more. But we urgently need your support to make this happen. Not everyone can be on the front line of this battle, but when you support Gospel of Life, you are saving lives. Your life-saving gift of $25, $50, or $100 will help us provide alternatives to women who think they have no choice but abortion. And for those countless women who have lost children to abortion, Gospel of Life Ministries will help them find forgiveness, healing, and peace in the cross of Christ and become outspoken advocates for the lives of their unborn children. The help you provide will also bring the saving word of life to churches through a training program that is raising a mass voice that will see abortion stopped. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
Well, welcome to our action segment. Janet, it was great having Dan on with us. And, you know, as we pointed out in that brief analysis of the Supreme Court's decision, we wouldn't have had any progress with a decision like this had it not been for the work people did in the elections.
That's
in
right.
2000, in 2002, in 2004, because the senators who confirmed the Supreme Court nominees that the president put before them made it possible for the two men to be on the Supreme Court who brought this this decision about.
That's right. So for anyone who got involved in those two election cycles, they really have to, a lot to celebrate, to say that, you know, if we hadn't worked as hard as we did, then we wouldn't have got what we got. But now we need everyone to engage and get to busy now for 2008 elections.
Because we've got to build on this decision. We've got a long way to go to the final goal.
That's right.
And elections matter. That's the lesson that keeps coming through.
That's right.
2008 election cycle, it seems like it's been in progress for a long time already.
Well, you know, if you turn on the TV, I think just about every single day they're talking about candidates, Republican, Democrat, and more people are throwing their hats in the ring. And, you know, there's a lot of confusion to do. But what you need to do is research the candidates early on and get behind and decide who is the best candidate with the pro-life issue. And begin now. Volunteer for that candidate. A lot of these candidates already have staff around the country, and you need to really get involved and talk to your immediate circle about the candidates. Have those discussions.
And ask where they stand on this Supreme Court decision and on partial birth abortion. That's going to be two key issues that should define the presidential race in 2008 are the partial birth abortion issue that we've been discussing on this program, the Supreme Court decision specifically, because the candidates have spoken out about what they think about this decision.
Right.
And again, people can find their positions online. And then what kind of justices do they think should serve on the Supreme Court? Because the kind of people we have on the Supreme Court determines the outcome not only of abortion decisions, but decisions about religious freedom, marriage, education, the way we raise our children, the way our society functions.
Another way to check, you know, of course, the candidates' positions is some of them have held office already, and some of them voted on the partial birth abortion ban. Mm-hmm. So the first step is, why don't you see the candidates that have voted on this ban, see what their position was. How did they vote?
Yes.
And no matter what they're saying now, no matter how they're seeming to be less extreme on abortion right now, if they voted in support of, against banning partial birth abortion, then you know they're very extreme on abortion.
Now, we also have, this is a period of time when groups and individuals, communities and parishes need to build up their armies. This is the time now we have to register voters. This is the time now when you have to identify volunteers, because when it's in the heat of the campaign a year from now, it's not going to be enough time then to say, hey, we need more people to distribute literature, we need people to work the polls and get voters out. You can't do that in a few months. You've got to start now.
You've got to start recruiting.
Recruiting, identifying people who will say, hey, comes around to crunch time, I'm ready to help.
I'm ready to jump
Now's
in
the
and
time.
Give out literature. And some people who, say they're not good at walking around giving out literature, you can volunteer to go to that candidate's office and do phone banking, get on the telephone.
Absolutely.
Stuff envelopes. I mean, there's so many activities they can do, but they've got to make themselves known now.
Well, thanks, Janet. And brothers and sisters, you can find out more about how you can help in elections 2008 by going to politicalresponsibility.org, our special election website. Keep tuning in there for updates as we go deeper in to the political season. Thanks for joining us. Join us again next week on Gospel of Life.
Not until people saw images of children in coal mines did they enact child labor laws. Not until people saw images of human torture did they rise up against slavery. And now, after seeing these images, what will you do? Priests for Life, because America will never reject abortion unless America sees abortion. Call now to learn how you can help.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today. The Gospel of Life program is made possible by the supporters of Gospel of Life Ministries and Priests for Life. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of stopping abortion and providing post-abortion healing. Specific outreaches mentioned are examples of the programs conducted and supported. Gifts are considered to be without use restriction unless specifically stipulated by the donor.